to Native America Calling from Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. A new tabletop role-playing game is challenging the pattern of mainstream games that often rely on stereotypical Native images. The developers for Coyote and Crow are primarily Native. The characters and setting reflect a more complex Native narrative. The creators hope it will win over Native fans of mainstream games like Dungeons & Dragons that have been around since the 1970s. We're talking with Native RPGs right after National Native News. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Lawyers for the Rosebud Sioux Tribe and the U.S. Department of Justice argued Thursday before the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. The Rosebud Sioux Tribe sued the Indian Health Service and the Department of Health and Human Services in 2016, claiming that IHS healthcare is so inadequate it violates treaty obligations. The tribe prevailed in part in a lower court and the agencies appealed. Victoria Wicks has this report.
Department of Justice Attorney John Koppel says the U.S. provides health services to the entire Native population, spending around $2 billion a year on more than 600 hospitals and clinics. But he says these services were created by Congress, not by the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1868.
The treaty simply required the United States to provide a single physician and a house for that physician, and not to exceed the cost of $3,000 and annual appropriations for that physician.
Koppel notes that the one physician was intended to serve the entire Great Sioux Nation. He says this lawsuit has been filed to create a permanent trust duty where one does not exist. The Rosebud Sioux Tribe is represented by Sioux Falls lawyer Tim Billion. He says Congress has affirmed its obligations under the Treaty of 1868 with laws that expand Indian health care.
The other party to the treaty, in the sense of arguing this lawsuit, is taking one position, but I would argue that the Congress of the United States has taken a much different position. And we've seen that in report after report after report, and study after study, and hearing after hearing, where Congress has reaffirmed its obligation to provide this health care.
Billion says a party to a treaty with the federal government should be able to get a declaration of its rights in federal court because there is no other place to make that argument. The Eighth Circuit will issue an opinion at a later date. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Two nurses in Canada's French-speaking province of Quebec have been fired. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, health authorities made the decision after the nurses were accused of making fun of an Indigenous patient at a clinic near Montreal.
The nurses are accused of referring to the patient as Joyce. That was a reference to Joyce Echaquan. In September, she filmed herself on her mobile phone while being mocked by healthcare workers at a Quebec hospital. She later died. In the more recent incident, the nurses also mocked a patient in the same city of Joliet, northeast of Montreal. Afterward, the regional health authority fired the nurses, saying they had breached the code of ethics of the nursing profession and the ethics and values of the health authority. A spokeswoman said discriminatory, racist, and intimidating behavior is unacceptable. Ghislaine Picard is the Grand Chief of the Assembly of First Nations in Quebec. He calls it inhumane.
It's like adding insult to injury, and there's no place for that. But yet, you know, they allow themselves to do it. Not only is it an insult to the person, but it's very disrespectful of Joyce's memory.
Meanwhile, the Native Women's Association of Canada called the incident an outrage and demanded a full investigation into the conduct of the nurses. And it says it's shocking that healthcare professionals would behave in such a racist manner so soon after the condemnations that followed the release of the video by Joyce Echaquan. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A ceremonial swearing-in was held Thursday for Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland. With her family by her side, Haaland was sworn in by Vice President Kamala Harris. Haaland's attire captured attention on social media, with a video of her getting ready for the occasion, wrapping her moccasins, and a photo of her ribbon skirt. Haaland took the oath of office Tuesday during a small ceremony. Her first full day as secretary was Wednesday. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Now, National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Support by the Sanoski Chambers Law Firm, championing tribal sovereignty and defending Native American rights since 1976, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Support by the American Indian College Fund, providing scholarships to Native students of every age for over 30 years. Applications for the upcoming school year accepted through May 31st at collegefund.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Shirwutui. Whether you're a gamer or not, you've likely heard of Dungeons & Dragons. It's a role-playing game, or RPG, that involves a lot of creativity and storytelling ability. But as our guest today will tell you, games like these, which have been around since the 1970s, haven't always been welcoming to Native people or other people of color. Change is slow, but it's happening. Coyote and Crow is one game now in development by Native creators. Instead of restoring to tired stereotypes, it strives for a sophisticated narrative that Native gamers can appreciate. For one, it's set in an alternative future where Native people did not suffer from colonization. A recent crowdfunding campaign for the game surged way past its original goal, and today it stands at over $500,000. And we'll learn more about it and other imaginative games created by and for Native people. And we'd like to hear from you. Call us at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And today we're going to start off in Bothell, Washington. With us on the line is Derek Pounds. He is a lead developer of Coyote and Crow. And Derek is a citizen of the Samish Nation. Our pleasure to have him here. Derek, welcome to Native America Calling.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here, and I love to be able to talk about a hobby that I've loved for decades.
Well, it is exciting. And Derek, I do want to start off. We are saying role-playing games. There are people who have not played them, maybe have heard of them, like we said. But let's just talk to us a little bit about that. Describe what an RPG is and how it's played.
Sure. An RPG is a game that's all about collaborative storytelling. You sit down with a table of friends, typically four or five of you, and you work together to create a legend in a world that you have all created together as well. Really, if you've ever, pretended to be a fairy or an alien or whatever with your friends, it's like that, except that there's some rules in it so that no one can just say, I have a laser-blocking force field. That way you know what everything can do and have a random result of some activities.
And so you're using your imagination big time in all of this, and kind of plays into storytelling as well. And so for you, when you think of getting in this mode or doing some of these games, what do you think it unlocks?
For me, this is one of my main creative outlets. Honestly, I'm a little bit of an introvert, and so being able to sit around with a tight group of friends and tell a story is a great creative exercise for me, and it lets you try and get in the head of someone in a different circumstance than you're in. Sometimes games are power fantasies. Sometimes they're explorations of being an outsider or investigating crimes or whatever, but there's really just infinite possibilities, and it's a great opportunity to spend time and build bonds with other people.
And so recall your first RPG. What did you think of it the first time you played?
Well, like a lot of people, the first RPG I played was Dungeons & Dragons, specifically Advanced Dungeons & Dragons back in 1989. I was 9 years old. A kid down at the end of my block played it with his older brother and invited me to join. They had me run a game, I think, as a little bit of a hazing prank, and I had them fight Worf from Star Trek. but I was hooked from day one. It's an epic fantasy setting where you can tell stories of adventurers going out and doing amazing things. At the time, I would say, I wasn't very aware of the way that narrative is hostile to Indigenous people, but that's certainly something I learned as I was growing up.
And let's get into that a little bit more. What do you mean?
Well, D&D, which is by far the most popular and most influential role-playing game, is really built out of a colonial narrative. The core activity of the game is going from civilization into some wild, untamed place, and either by force taming it or taking treasures and bringing them back to civilization. And, you know, growing up as Native American, it becomes pretty clear, looking at history, which side we were on for that.
And so you're kind of talking about colonizers and colonization and you know, some of that. And being that kind of player and knowing your own people's history as well as histories of other Native nations, what does that do? Does that make you want to distance? Does it make you not want to play? Even though the concept is exciting, you know, tell me more about that.
As with any situation in which where you're going to come across casual or unthinking racism, I've had a lot of experiences with that. You know, sometimes growing up, I've had to confront people who are really putting a heroic spin on taking territory and colonizing. Other times, I've decided to stay quiet because that's what I felt like I needed to do in order to keep a group of friends. It's been challenging, and certainly as I got older and started kind of becoming the center of a group of people and organizing my own games and even designing some of my own materials, I really made sure to focus on moving away from that kind of narrative and moving towards games that don't have that as the central part of their storytelling.
And then, you know, that takes us to Coyote and Crow. Let's start there. Go ahead. Anything you want to tell us to introduce us on how maybe this game is changing that narrative?
Oh, absolutely. Coyote and Crow is a game that is being designed by Connor Alexander. I'm just one of his team. And it is a game that turns all of that on its head and really puts Native North American people in control of our own narrative in a way that I have never seen another game do. Also unique to pretty much any RPG I've seen. I can't think of an alternative. It shows us in a future setting. It doesn't lock us into the past. Even science fiction games tend to depict Native American people as being backwards or unsophisticated, as relying on mysticism and magic rather than the technology of the world that surrounds them. Coyote and Crow doesn't lean on those tropes. And honestly, I think the response to our Kickstarter has been proof that people are thirsty for this kind of storytelling. You said earlier it was $500,000. Just today, it broke $600,000. And we are absolutely floored by the response. Our customers have been so generous. One of the options that we gave customers was donating books to Native American libraries, and almost 3,000 books have already been pledged to donate so far. And we're just floored by that response.
Well, congratulations. I think we are hearing exactly what the people are wanting. If you'd like to share some thoughts about role-playing games, if you're just hearing about them for the first time, you can comment too. What do you think? And what do you think about creating a space for Native people to jump into this? Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Derek, so right now it is in development, but when it comes out, what exactly are people going to be holding in their hand, and how does it work?
Well, it's going to be a book. We're not exactly sure how long, but probably 300 to 400 pages. That's kind of normal for a game like this. And I know that sounds like an intimidating textbook to people who haven't played the games, but really, if you have anybody around you that's familiar with them, it's a lot easier than it sounds. I'm personally a very slow reader, so it scared me away at first, too. but you're going to have a book that lays out a world that, due to a climate catastrophe hundreds of years ago, colonization broadly never happened anywhere. And so Native Americans were allowed to develop without interference from Europeans. And the game itself is then set in the not-too-distant future, in the year 2100, where virtual reality and flying vehicles are common, and the characters will be from one of the several Native nations, and you can tell an infinite variety of stories.
And so when a person gets into this narrative, you know, do you have to have a certain set of number of people with you, or tell me more on that part?
Of course. Yeah, to play really any role-playing game, but this role-playing game as well, you need to have at least two people. And at any table, one of the people is going to be representing the world that everyone is in. They're going to be portraying all of the people in the world, all of the weather, all of the animals, with the exception of each other person at the table is going to have a character to be part of the story that they are involved in, and that character they control absolutely. So they will take their character through the story that the story guide is what we call them, the person who plays the world, has created, and make the decisions that their characters would make to see how the story evolves. You'll also need a piece of paper, a pencil, and some dice. Our game uses 12-sided dice, and you can find those at any hobby store.
And I want to know what that dice does. You're hearing about Coyote and Crow. Maybe you've read a little bit about it. I know a lot of buzz is happening on this on social media, and we are talking to somebody connected to it. He is a lead developer. If you'd like to talk directly with him, it's Derek Pounds. He's here with us the full hour. Go ahead and dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And maybe you've heard people in your circle, maybe even your children, talking about RPGs, role-play games. And now you're getting a real view as to what they're doing. And what do you think about this introduction into Native life? You can give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And as we are hearing, to be able to jump into all of this, you got to really use your imagination. And what do you think about that? Something that is encouraging this, especially with Native themes and calling on Native knowledge. Join us. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We'll keep the phone lines open. Elizabeth Parachevich stood up for Alaska Native civil rights in the 1940s. Eloise Cobell challenged the federal government. Now Deb Haaland says she'll be a fierce advocate for our Native nations as the new Secretary of the Interior. We're highlighting notable Native women in our Indigenous Women's History Month series. That's on the next Native America Calling.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a no-charge, 24/7, confidential and anonymous domestic, dating and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the Chat Now icon on strongheartshelpline.org. This program is supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are talking about role-playing games today, also known as RPGs. And do you play Dungeons & Dragons or Shadowrun? Call us and let us know what you think and what you look for in a game. And you're hearing also about Coyote and Crow. What do you think about it? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Here with us on the line is Derek Pounds. He is a lead developer for the game, and he is a citizen of the Samish Nation. And Derek, before the break, you were telling us how the game works. You said some dice. How does the dice work?
Similar to a lot of games, our game uses dice just to determine anything that there is consequence to whether or not it happens and that might fail. So with our game, dice represent both your character's natural ability at things, like just how smart or strong you are, as well as what they've studied, whether they're good at computers or they are a doctor or something like that. You roll those dice against a number that the GM decides or the story guide decides. And if you get over that number on any of the 12-sided dice you are rolling, you succeed in whatever you were trying to do. And that lets you take the story to the next step and find out what happened.
And so when you're doing this game, it sounds like you're calling on a lot of your own skills, kind of knowledge on survival, problem-solving skills. What are some other things that you're really calling on to be able to play and have fun with this?
Well, that's one of the lovely things about role-playing games is that certainly you can call on your own skills. Sitting at a table, oftentimes people will take some knowledge of survival or medicine or technology they have and bring it into the game and make that part of the narrative. But also you can portray characters that know things that you couldn't possibly know. I am terrible with computers myself, but if I make a character who is trained in computers, I can use the rules of the game and work with the story guide to tell a story where my character is an elite hacker or something like that. Most of your own skills that you're bringing to the table is empathy, storytelling, and narrative. Every person at the table is paying attention to everybody else to try and facilitate telling a better story, to support the drama that other characters want to see, to take the opportunity for your character to have a spotlight and support the other characters in having the spotlight. And then the story guide, the person who heads the game, is there to try and bring this all into a cohesive narrative, to try and make sure there is a world and a scenario and environment where all of the players can thrive and all of the players can feel like they are participating in the game in their fullest and that their character is getting a story that is worth telling.
Very nice. And when you're calling people to the table, you're also calling non-natives. Is there any thoughts about this, of weaving in this game into not just native circles, but all circles?
We have thought a lot about this. And like I said, a big element of any role-playing game is empathy. And so we do want non-native people playing our games. And we offer guidelines within the books on how non-native people can approach our games in a sensitive way. We talk about how they should not assume anything about cultures, that while they certainly should imagine themselves as a native character, they shouldn't pretend to be native, and that's a distinction that we try to make within the books. But we want them to be able to see the way our cultures approach storytelling and the way our cultures approach conflict resolution. Most RPGs at their core are games about combat. And while certainly a fight might break out in our game, it is not the center of the mechanics. Like, it's not the assumed thing that's going to be happening every time you sit at the table like it is in most games. A lot of non-native people have commented on our Kickstarter and asked about cultural appropriation and other subjects like that. And we've tried to teach them the distinction between appropriation and appreciation. But certainly we also do have elements in there. One of the ways we avoid we tried to make sure that we weren't appropriating any of the native cultures that we ourselves don't represent is we have made a lot of ideas very broad, allowing people to, and inviting people to insert their own native traditions into the game where appropriate. We have elements where, for example, if your character is someone trained in performing ceremonies for their groups and for their cultures, you can work with the story guide to create culturally sensitive ceremonies that are appropriate to your tribe and your culture.
And, you know, the appropriation part of this, too, I think is a big one. I know a lot of people can comment on. We're going to bring in a gentleman and want to get his take on that, too. Before we do, we're going to say hi to one of our callers. We have Patricia in Belen tuned in today in New Mexico, listening in on KUNM. Patricia, thanks for reaching out. Go ahead, share your thoughts.
Thank you, Tara, for taking my call. And thank you, Derek. I am 74 years old, and all of my life, it was my wish, I thought, I wish someone would invent games for healthy helping. And now I'm so delighted to hear you talk about the games that you're designing and your intention for Indigenous people. And I call it healthy helping. That means to teach win-win, constructive and life-affirming decisions and outcomes. And we need to give up win-lose, nobody wins, destructive and death-producing decision and outcome. And so I call that power within to have power with each other, co-creative power within to have power with each other, and that eliminates the need for power over. I also call it the empire folly, which is conquest and genocide and plunder, which we know is mass murder and theft. We need to steward the environment and teach the next generation. And so I'm delighted and wanted to say how much gratitude I have for and hope for the next generation to have healthy ways of learning. And games are certainly a very creative and novel way to do it.
Indeed. Patricia, thank you for giving us a ring. And I guess I got to say neighbor, because you're just down the road. Your community is just down the road from me. So thank you for giving us a ring. And Derek, anything you want to tell Patricia?
Thank you so much, Patricia. We really have been thinking about that in every step of this process. And really, our game is about problem resolution, not just conquest over problems. And that is a philosophy we've been taking to every element of this game we've approached, from the art to the writing to the mechanics to the types of stories that we're going to be presenting as the kinds of stories that are best told with this game.
Again, thank you, Patricia. Join us, too, at 1-800-996-2848. With us today also is Dr. Lee Francis IV. He joins us today out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, and he is the owner of Red Planet Books and Comics and CEO and publisher of Native Realities. And he is from the Pueblo of Laguna. Dr. Francis, thank you for joining us today here. I know you go by Lee, so Lee, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. I love to come back and talk about all things Indigenerd.
And we have fun when we do. So, Lee, just hearing a little bit from Derek, of course, the creation. I want to hear your excitement about what he's putting out, too. But he made a big, he opened up a big space for us, too, when we talk about these kind of games, appropriation or misrepresenting Native nations. And you hear the work that they're doing with Coyote and Crow to make sure that this isn't happening. And it also sounds like, teaching people a little bit more about our culture, how to be connected in a respectful way. And I would like to hear your thoughts on that, that some like this is available.
Yeah, it's so exciting and dynamic to see this. There is so little. This is one of the reasons why, when I originally started launching our publishing and founding the Indigenous Comic Con and Red Planet, is because we need more of this kind of stuff for us in the world, not just not the nerd side, but we need the kind of work that's going on with Coyote and Crow, another great game that's built, in that sort of that same vein as Edrigor by Alan Turner. I think that was the kind of original Native role-playing game that was out there. And this takes, that's built in kind of a fantasy world. Coyote and Crow being built in our modern, quote unquote modern world, but where there's recognizable things. This is so exciting for me because I really do think, we need these types of spaces where we can think through and play through. It is about play. Resolutions that don't involve, punching each other, right? I mean, for lack of a better term. And much like Derek, I grew up with Dungeons and Dragons, and we all kind of came out of this hack and slash world where we're just like, yeah, if it moves, kill it and then steal its treasure. And that is so very much the colonial perspective, right? So the types of role-playing games that are coming out and building an indigenized philosophy is blowing my gourd, and the success of this is just absolutely astounding to me. I'm so excited. It's going to be great.
Mm-hmm. And Lee, talk to us about being a player and, you know, being in that role and taking on, you know, different adventures and thinking about this and then being asked to use your own context, your own cultural connections. And talk to me about playing these games first before any of these ones that you mentioned existed and then kind of moving into what these are opening up. Tell me a little bit about playing.
Yeah, I think when you first started, and I know there's other players, you know, and Derek plays, and we all kind of do this, but I think when you first started, it was, I mean, you would be creating characters, and you know, that would be built upon particular archetypes. So you'd be the noble paladin, or you'd be the mage, you'd be whatever, right? And then you'd have an ethnicity, or you have a race, and you could be a gnome or a dwarf, or you know, and that's the old style D&D, you know, playing, and because it established these archetypes. There was some limitations in terms of the way that you could play. And what I often saw was, you know, as I got older into these playing, you would see people shift them toward their own identities anyway, or shift them away, but you started building these worlds, you know, and so just the players themselves in terms of character creation, you would get folks that would want to play right into who they were, like enhancing that, like, I want to be the biggest, baddest, burliest dude. You know, and with a giant sword and, you know, the hold and a shield and the armor, all the rest, right? And then, you know, as I started getting more sophisticated and coming out of like my teen years, my middle school years, it became more about the intricacies of the character, the nuances as an adult, saying, I'm going to create a character that may be flawed. And so this new kind of realm of storytelling, and there were some great role-playing story games that were kind of before that, but this new kind of realm of storytelling began to take in that it was like, oh, okay, so let's create things, you know, where you have a character that's, you know, the person you're playing gets to be more, you know, they have a flaw, and that's, you know, that could be, you know, something that leads to some complications, right? And then it even developed further within the role-playing world around this idea of cooperative and storytelling. So how are we doing this together? There isn't like a DM, there isn't just like this omnipotent storytelling character that guides everybody along, but that we all start to make meaning together. So in the times that I've played, you know, and playing these types of games, you know, it's been amazing to see the evolution, and it's created much more, you know, I remember some of my first adventures, but you know, after you go to your 50th dungeon, you know, it loses its efficacy. But in the ways in which you create stories and create worlds together with the group of players at the table, that becomes really, you know, much more powerful. And especially when you're looking to solve problems and work things together, that's the best part of this. And that's why I like the idea of Coyote and Crow. As a player, I'm looking forward to, you know, being in the world, you know, that Connor has created, and also being able to help build the story of that world. That's the neatest part about the gaming experience. You get to do both. And that's, you know, that's been over 50 some years of RPG development. And it becomes more and more exciting and more dynamic the more you play.
And I think one thing that's really exciting about hearing about all of this is you're living out story. You know, it's one thing to, you know, come together with a story and you share that. But when you're actually with a group of people and you're all assuming the roles of those characters, it seems kind of like a mini play as well. And I think things change because you're really thinking about your character and the emotions and how they react to things. And then that dynamic of the people who are also playing this as well is really interesting. And again, I want to hear your thoughts on this. If you're just new to all of this and you are thinking something after hearing what these games present, I'm curious, what are you thinking? What kind of doors do you think this opens up? 1-800-996-2848 is a number. Can you imagine playing this game with people in your office? Mm-hmm. Call in now. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And so, Lee, just thinking of the different scenarios and the work that you do to try and educate people with all the roles you've played, even as an educator and working with schools, You know, what do you think these kind of games, kind of problems they could solve, or creating healthier environments by putting people in these different situations and thinking out loud together?
Yeah, when you're, and that's, I mean, kind of what you're saying, that's the beauty of that is, it, you know, it is role playing, right? And it allows you to think through these experiences. There's a great game that I just picked up called Dialect. And one of your past guests, the incredible and incomparable Elizabeth LaFonce, Dr. LaFonce, wrote a little section for it. And it's about, the tag is how, it's called How a Language Dies. And it walks you through building a language as a group of people within a scenario together. So you're role-playing, but it also builds in that component of learning. So you're learning to solve problems together. You're learning to build a language together. And then over time, seeing what happens and how that experience is so profound when you're there being humans all together in a very small defined zone, right? So there's a moment of escapism, which is totally beautiful and brilliant because you can think through things, but it's not like, oh, we're going to a business conference to solve the problems of our community. You're just going there to have fun and play, but you're bringing in all of your pieces to this. And if you structure a game in a way as either the facilitator, the storyteller, or whatever, then you can bring in these pieces to talk about issues that maybe you're facing back home. One of the things, you know, bringing up is colonization, but also we see this, you know, issues around race and how people get along with each other, and how you can solve those and what complications happen. So in many ways, it's a mini experiential learning adventure. And I think that's always what appeals nice. To all of this for yep. me, right?
Interesting. And, you know, putting this into play in our Native nations, what if this was happening in the circle of young people in your life? What would change? 1-800-996-2848 is a number. We look forward to your calls. Give us a ring. Phone lines, they're open. 1-800-99-NATIVE.
Did you know COVID financial relief in the form of forgivable PPP loans is available to small business owners and independent contractors, including artists? DreamSpring has worked with New Mexicans looking to open or expand their business for over 25 years, and now they're helping provide PPP loans. Information, including how to qualify, at dreamspring.org. That's dreamspring.org. DreamSpring supports this program.
Thanks for joining us today here on Native America Calling. And we appreciate any time that you tune in. And when you do tune in, there are moments where we take breaks and we introduce you to different songs that are coming from our indigenous artists. And if you ever wondered who was playing today at a certain break, you can always take a look at our website, nativeamericacalling.com, where we give you a little bit of the information of who was singing that song. And often there are links directly to the people who are making the music. And of course, we always appreciate all of our artists for giving us, you know, these great songs to share with you. And a lot of times they reflect exactly what we're talking about on the discussion. And today's discussion is about role-playing games. You've heard a lot about it so far, and you're hearing about what Native people are doing to create them, as well as jump into the play position. If you'd like to share some thoughts, go ahead and dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Also here, too, with us today is Derek Pounds, lead developer of the game Coyote and Crow. Also here, too, is Dr. Lee Francis IV, owner of Red Planet Books and Comics, also CEO and publisher of Native Realities. Gentlemen, thank you both for being here. And when it comes to developing some of this stuff, we're going to get more insight. This time it's going to come out of Olympia, Washington. On the line is Tyrone Kousten, and he is a longtime player of tabletop role-playing games and also the creator of the All Sacred Indian Clubhouse server. And he is Nez Perce and Wenatchee. Our pleasure to have him here. Tyrone, thank you for joining us. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And tell us a little bit about developing. And it seems like you really got to be thinking about a lot because you're creating scenarios. And it seems it changes with the player. So you got to kind of foresee other things. What would you like to share about, you know, creating some of this work?
Yeah, so the All Sacred Clubhouse is this online group that kind of started out of indie tabletop RPGs as a group. I'm glad Dr. Francis mentioned Dialect. I sell it in my day job at this little indie company. And a lot of them had this idea that it had gotten very white within the indie scene because they just didn't have the guidance or the forethought to include people of color at the beginning. So a lot of us, myself included, got brought into the community and were really allowed to kind of like find our own voice. And that led to me saying I wanted this for a lot of other people. And so that Thorny Games, the Heart of the Adrenochorn, all those kinds of people have been really supportive. And so I kind of created this space and for natives to play and learn about tabletop games. And it basically turned into this conversation around every time Native people do this, we fall into a pattern that we didn't really want to do, which is where the name All Sacred actually came from, which was a lot of us had made attempts before, and it was less about creating the stories that we wanted to tell, and it was more about trying to prove to non-natives that natives were awesome through our games. and when we realized that, we started working more on the stories that we wanted to tell. So we have little design workshops and stuff where we've just been making games that are more about our experiences as Native people growing up, primarily in, like, I would say, like, the 80s to the early aughts. So one of the games that we actually have in development right now is called We Are Here, and it came from this conversation about some of us have done some bad things in the past, especially as young people, and the games we were recreating were like, in those moments, here we are, is about what your ancestors and the spirits of your family would be talking about while you were there messing up, and would they be helping you get away because they don't want you to face consequences, or would they help you get arrested and that way you learn? And really having these conversations about, like, what that kind of means in the story and what that means for us to have these, this space for developing games where it's like, we don't really think a broad audience would really be interested at the moment about a game about your departed grandma getting after you for messing up. But it was really cathartic for us to make that game and for us to kind of experience playtesting it. And that's just kind of the stuff that's sort of come out of having this space where it's allowed to be irreverent and experimental and really ask the question of, like, what we actually want to get out of games.
Mm-hmm. And what you were describing reminded me of this meme that I saw not too long ago. And it was talking about, you know, what your ancestors, you know, the face that they are making as they're watching you today on your phone, and it just cracked me up. But I get it. And these kind of scenarios are things that, you know, they hold a lot of meaning. And when we get together and we have different kind of conversations, you know, and being able to think out loud, and that's something I can't say enough in just hearing what all of this does is, you're really connecting to people in a really unfiltered way a lot of times, it seems, because you're put in these scenarios and your problem-solving skills or how you think about things, how you reason your way out of a situation, it reveals a lot. And I think that's fun. And Tyrone, you know, thinking about this too and wanting to create a space, often, a lot of times when natives are pulled into the circle, they want us because we're mystical, we're magical, and that makes things uncomfortable. And I'd like you to speak to that more. Go ahead, Tyrone.
Yeah, and that's exactly kind of what we're trying to avoid you know, promoting too much. And it's that I think a lot of non-natives are really well-intentioned when they do this, and that's why it's so common. But it's, you know, you show up at a gaming convention and you're a 17-year-old kid and you just want to buy some dice and play some games, and all of a sudden you have to answer, is this game historically accurate? Is this a respectful portrayal in this cartoon series. What do you think about this comic book character? And he's just like, this is three PhDs worth of material. I have the PSATs next week. Like, this is way over my head. And so I think something that's really stifling about these spaces can be like, I really want to engage with this. I really want to have fun with this, but I really don't want to go in there and be the native rep. I really don't want to go in there and explain something that's above my like knowledge level or something that I know just isn't really something to be talked about while you're at a convention. And there's like, I don't know, when that expectation to like always have, you know, the mystical knowledge, the cultural knowledge is there, those kind of stories and those, man, like, yeah, little fun designs that, you know, We Are Here was started off of a very similar meme, which was I made a joke that, you know, I can say with total faith that I'm not my ancestor's wildest dreams. My ancestor did not dream of being a sales manager. That wasn't a thing. But I knew enough of my elders that I know they would have really liked me. So we started having these discussions about like what kind of people actually were in our families about 100 years ago. And we can talk about the messy parts, because sometimes those messy parts, when we're in a space where everybody kind of gets it, that's where we find things that wind up being really meaningful for us. And it happens when we have that space to make it, you know, a joke.
Yep. And boy, we love to laugh. Lee, I know you're thinking some. Go ahead. Add your thoughts.
I think it's brilliant. And I just absolutely adore when I get the chance, honestly, I'll just shout out to Native American Calling, finding all these other great nerds out there, all of these players. It's such a wonderful wealth. So, and I think there's this wonderful shared experience that we have, this laughter, this idea, you know, founding and starting Native Realities and all the work that we've done has been the same thing. It's not about, I think, how does Dr. Jeanette Haynes-Ryder put it? It's not about food, feathers, and fun. It's that we have, you know, we have our families. We have all of these multiple experiences. And I think that's what RPGs, and I think that's the brilliance of something like Coyote and Crow to come out and say, like, hey, let's do these cool imaginings. But let's also bring ourselves into these spaces, and we get to, in many ways, we get to actually be who we are. Because I think when we're out in the world, we have to kind of put on this, you know, we put on this different kind of armor. We got to put on this different scenario. We're kind of the native person in the room or whatever. When we get to RPG, we just get to be. We just get to like, oh, I don't have to be the native. I get to be whatever I want as part of this game. I get to be a native, you know, superhero or a warrior or an underwater sea king. It doesn't matter. And that's the, like, it's wherever your imagination, your heart, and your spirit take you. So that's why, you know, I love it. And I love nerding out, hearing other native nerds up in this space. It's always my favorite thing.
Let's add more to this conversation, Derek. I got to get your take too. Go ahead.
I got to say, I am right there with Tyrone. I don't think any Indigenous person or really any marginalized person has ever sat in a group of people and not felt those representation sweats, not have everybody look to them when something comes up to see what their take is. And, you know, that's one of the things that we're really hoping for to build with Coyote and Crow, is find spaces where groups of Native Americans can sit together and play one of these games and feel like it's representing who they are. That's something we're really excited about. It's very difficult, especially since I think oftentimes in any storytelling, in any scenario, we are defined by our tragedies. Like, that's all people know about us. And so we all do, when we're playing role-playing games, try to find space where we can talk about how our cultures were great and how our cultures are still wonderful and accepting and supportive in a way that I think a lot of people don't understand.
Mm-hmm. And also making these spaces welcome. I know, and we've heard it too, about how some of the mainstream games, you know, make it challenging for people of other genders. Is this a male-dominated thing? And what needs to be done to make sure all genders are being considered or given that respective space? And what's being done in some of these games to make that space? Go ahead and start us off, Derek.
Representation is getting better in the hobby, just as more and more people are coming together and learning about it. But yeah, in the same way that it's been hostile to people of color and Indigenous people especially, the game environment has been hostile to women. Generally, the way I describe it is that really the core story of role-playing games is the Western. And in many of the same ways, you know, I mean, you may be replacing sheriffs and natives with knights and orcs, but women are not represented well in those community in those types of stories, and so the games themselves felt hostile to women, and certainly some of the people who played the games didn't help that at all.
And Lee, anything to add?
I think that's absolutely. You know, when we think about this, about how we've been playing, a lot of this other stuff has been problematic in these spaces. And so I think that we are, you know, we're reclaiming our RPGs, right? We're reclaiming our space in these role-playing scenarios, in these spaces where we're not having to, you know, be something that we're not. We get to, well, I guess that's kind of weird because we are something that we're not when we're role-playing, but we just get to be, you know, native players along with everybody else and not having to deal with all this other stuff. So, you know, I think that that's part of the, I think that's part of the appeal of being able to, the fantastical nature of things, the chance to think through things, the chance to, you know, be the indigenous nerds and not be the, you know, with all eyes on you of being like, is this okay? And I think that's the way that this newest crop of games has really been developing, especially within in the role playing medium and the worlds that like all three of us are existing in right now, and many more. But I think that that's something that like I find really hopeful and positive, and not nerdy. Right. I actually think this is not just like the nerd world, like, oh, you can only be a native nerd to play, or you can only be an indigenous, you can only like you got a nerd, like you're some Stranger Things and we're gonna be like, hello, let me tell you about. I'm like, I think this is great stuff for everybody to sit down and play. I think it's great stuff for everybody to remember that it's not just playing online and, you know, with shoot 'em ups and all the rest. This is about creating human to human connections. This is about our true indigeneity. This is what our ancestors have told us to do is like, hey, be with people, hang out with people, learn from people, tell stories, be in a story. This is what role playing and RPGs and the world allow us to have. So
yeah, and thinking of diversifying who we're playing this with, you know, like even inviting grandma to sit in on a session or your parents. And boy, things sure change when you invite your parents to the table too. And you know, I'm thinking of playing the game Cards Against Colonialism with my mom, and she usually wins. But, you know, it's really interesting, really exciting. And we got to start wrapping things up here. And Derek, if people want to continue to follow the progression of Coyote and Crow, where do they go?
They can search for Coyote and Crow on Google or Kickstarter. If you search on a search engine, there is what I am sure is a lovely bluegrass band called Coyote and Crow. That's not us, but we should be one of those top results.
All right. Thank you for that. And that's going to wrap it up for our program today. And if you missed anything or you want to share this program with a friend, tell them they can find it on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. That's where the archive will be, and also the archive of anything you heard this week, week before, and sometime back. Thank you to everybody that we heard from on the hour, Dr. Lee Francis IV, Derek Pounds, and Tyrone Cotson. And we're back next week with another lineup of five great shows. Monday, we're continuing our look at Native women making history. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Associate producer is Andy Murphy. Marino Spencer is our engineer. Nola Days Moses is the distribution director. And Bob Peterson is the network manager for Native Voice One. Clifton Chadwick is our resource development specialist. Antonio Gonzalez is the anchor and producer for National Native News. Charles Sather is our chief of operations. And president and CEO of Kawanic Broadcast Corporation is Jacqueline Salee. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. We'll meet you here Monday.
Smoking gave me COPD, which makes it harder and harder for me to breathe. I have a tip for you. If your doctor gives you 5 years to live, spend it talking with your grandchildren. Explain to them that your grandpa's not going to be around anymore to share his wisdom and his love. I haven't figured out how to do that yet, and I'm running out of time.
COPD makes it harder and harder to breathe and can cause death. You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Osio, a yella nu dana dega, gutla ulskedi, no gu, sina tigesai. Udlana da notic, gohuelo di dodoa, marketplace, gutla, and skirti, hiskatu iikohida. Tetla no heta ni yawia, a yella nu dana dega, and access diski. Naski yiged stela at healthcare.gov, 1-800-318-2596. He are get to know some Medicare, a la Medicaid unadalka.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.